What was that?
Oh, I just opened a beer.
What kind of beer?
A Corona.
Listen to them, children of the night. What music they make.
Oh my goodness, it's day 387 of our quarantine.
Oh God, has it been that long?
It's been that long. I've decided that if this goes on for weeks, I'm just going to slowly start lighthousing you guys.
Oh just, my God.
Just being like every single episode, like, yeah, it's been 3 months. What are you talking about?
I have a sneaky suspicion that you're not going to slowly do that. You're just going to dive right in head first.
All these things, I'm just going to be like, yeah, you did that like 4 months ago. What's the problem?
Well, I'm going to start journaling so that you can't do that.
I think I've actually decided I'm going to do something I haven't done since I was 17. I'm going to shave my face completely.
Oh,
are you actually going to do that?
I think I'm going to. I think I'm going to shave my face completely, and I'm going to gauge my lockdown based on how long my beard gets afterwards.
You should have a beard race with the Iranians.
I mean, I would lose.
Both Sam and Arash would probably have you beat.
You need to stand next to your dad when you shave your beard because you will look exactly the same as him.
Nope.
So to give our listeners some context, we have two Iranian friends that are named Sammy and Arash, and they were all talking about how they wanted to judge time, how much time had gone by during the quarantine based on their beard length.
That's cool.
And they're in states with actual lockdowns.
Yeah. Especially Arash, dude. He's super locked down now.
So they got nothing left to do.
Absolutely nothing left.
You got to find ways to entertain yourself.
Exactly. Speaking of ways we're going to entertain ourselves, how are we going to keep our sanity during these quarantines? How are we going to fight back when I tell you that you've been actually in quarantine for 6 years?
I've been doing a lot of virtual happy hours with my friends.
Oh, yeah. I did one of those earlier this week. That was actually like a lot of fun. That really took away the I don't know, the pain of being trapped and isolated in this crippling future we live in. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm a full staunch supporter of those. So have you also been doing those over Skype, or did you guys... I use Zoom for the first time. I don't even know what the fuck that is, but I use it.
Yeah, we also used Zoom for all the ones I went to last week. I went to more happy hours last week over like online than I have like in the last 6 months in real life. Because I can bring my baby to the online ones.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody cares. You can just like mute your microphone and then they stop hearing your baby crying. Whereas if you have the baby in real life, it's just, there's nothing you can do about it.
You're right.
What about you, Sam? How are you going to keep your sanity?
Dude, I've been working so fucking much.
It sounds like you're going to lose your sanity quicker if you maintain that pace.
It's crazy, man. Like, because the date, like during the bulk of the day, it gets kind of quiet for me and I'm not doing much.
Right.
And then like 4 o'clock hits and I end up working until 7.
Yeah, that sounds awful. Why are you in session right now? Why have I left session for you to just go into session?
It's all right. I've got the comfort and companionship of video games.
There have been so many. There is no shortage of video games that's coming out in the next like few weeks. It's actually insane, the video game release schedule that's getting ready to hit us. Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. With GameStop being finally forced to close. Did you see that, by the way? I don't know if any of you guys were paying any attention to that, but GameStop was trying to claim that they were an essential good.
There are a lot of...
I did see that.
Yeah, and so I guess California was like, "Yo, we can do this the hard way or the easy way," and they finally like closed their doors apparently, because they were straight up telling people, like associates, that if the areas that they were in were trying to force them to shut down, that they needed to contact GameStop's corporate offices and speak to their attorneys.
Wow!
So apparently California is like, really? you want to do this right now? I don't know. It's a goofy situation we live in when video games are essential goods. Although in order to keep our sanity, they may very well become essential goods.
You don't need to go to GameStop.
Right, I was gonna say
digital downloads.
Yeah,
for everything.
But there's so many people, like especially in like some of the gaming groups that I belong into on Facebook and stuff, that are just like, "Nah, I want my physical copies." I mean, you see with movie records. Collectors also, and yeah, records. Yeah. Records are the one thing that I like will maintain. I like physical copies of, but
meh.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to keep mine. I guess it's just going to be watching a ton of movies. I've been watching so much stuff lately. I caught Velocipaster, which was a lot of fun. God, talk about just like a B movie to end all B movies.
I feel like maternity leave was like a dry run for this for me, so I'm fine sitting at home for months on end, not going anywhere. I got this nailed down.
God, what else did I watch? I watched a whole bunch of... I've pretty much exhausted all of Amazon's anime selection.
Is that a big selection?
They have a bunch of, like... They have, like... they're films, sorry. They're, I guess, what do you call them? The anime movies, not, like, the TV shows. They have a whole bunch of TV shows and stuff on there. Yeah, I can't remember what... anime movies are called, but I've been watching through all of those on Amazon, like stuff like they have Ninja Scroll and like Devil City.
I love Ninja Scroll. That's one of my favorites.
And like Violence Jack. Violence Jackie. I don't know. There's been so much of it. So I've been watching a lot of those and making Atticus watch those with me because he gets me up at 5 o'clock in the morning. And so
we're going to watch what I want to watch.
Better than it used to be, though.
What's that?
5 a.m. is a lot better than it used to be, though.
Yeah, I think he's going through, like, some growth spurt right now, because last night he pounded, like, fucking 16 ounces almost.
Happy
damn.
Yeah, dude, like, and was waking up every 2 hours demanding to eat more food. And was just like, I guess he's going through, like, a growth spurt or something right now. The little guy's just, he's ravenous. Absolutely ravenous. He's been that way all morning, too, so I don't know. He's going to drink us out of house and home here shortly. It is what it is. Other things I've been trying to do to keep my sanity. Man, I don't know. It's spending a lot more time with my son, which is been a lot of fun actually. We're almost getting him to roll over. Can Silas roll over yet? Like completely by himself? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's Atticus is like he fights it really hard.
Yeah, it was like, just like one day out of nowhere. He was struggling with it for like weeks, and then one day he just bloop. And now he won't stop.
I don't know what it is, man. Atticus gets like halfway over, and he's just like, "No, I'm just gonna just stay right here. And if you make me go any further, I'm gonna freak out."
Lays on
you.
His side.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. He's like the opposite of a cat. You know how cats don't ever want to show you their belly. He wants to do is show you his belly. He doesn't want to show you his back. That's the issue for him.
Yep.
Because you can't see it, man. He doesn't know what's back there.
Yeah, I guess.
Quatu on his back. Doesn't want to show that off. It's embarrassing.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get it. You know, Atticus is self-conscious about his back.
He's got back issues.
Yeah, apparently. He's very self-conscious about his back rolls, apparently.
So sad to see.
But along the list of things that I've been watching, I watched a movie, Dark Coast got in contact with us again, and... showed me a little preview for this movie that's getting ready to, well, I guess it's already been released. It's been out for about a week, called Case 347. And it's interesting. I kind of rolled my eyes at first. I was hesitant to take this one because it's a found footage film. And those are very, very hard to pull off. But I have to say, I was very pleasantly surprised with this one. So Case 347, this is if you're into aliens and conspiracies and... you know, all the stuff that I'm really into, you might find you'll have some significant fun with this one. It's starring Maya Stojan, Chris Wax, and Jason Kropnik, and it's written and directed by Chris Wax. It's an interesting film. It doesn't overstay its runtime. I think it's about the perfect length for a film like this. It starts off with the main character, Mia, who's played by Maya. She's basically being interrogated, and she survived this like really traumatic incident. And so the movie plays out with the found footage explaining kind of how she got to where she is and why she's being interrogated now. And without giving too much away, she basically like inherits this home from her father that's near White Sands. And it's in Roswell, New Mexico. And so it's just like one of those like she gets there, she finds a whole bunch of boxes and files that her dad's been working on, and so she starts digging through them, and she sets out with a crew of filmmakers to debunk all this stuff that her dad has found. And then it turns out over a series of events that unfurl that it was all true. And so she
did you
gets,
just ruin the movie?
No. I mean, within the first 5 minutes, you know it's all true because she's getting interrogated.
Okay. It sounds like you ruined the movie for us.
But it's a lot of fun. It's actually like one of those things where me saying this, it might sound like I ruined the movie, but the best part of the film is the red herrings that lead to the events that take place. So it's actually like a really well-written kind of mystery story on top of this very suspenseful found footage film.
Cool.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. The direction was good. The acting, for a found footage movie, I think it was actually pretty on par with a lot of stuff that you'll see, you know, in from major releases. Like when you compare the acting in this to something like Paranormal Activity, It's gonna be in a similar vein. A lot of it was pretty believable. The more intense scenes were very believable. There was some of the dialogue where it's just kind of like conversation between the filmmakers, the film crew, like as they're going from destination to destination. That seemed like it might have been a little forced, but for the most part, I really enjoyed it. And it really doesn't take a whole lot of time to get off the ground. So you kind of like you see her being interrogated. And then there's enough to kind of give you the backstory of her relationship with her dad and everything that's going on, why she's inheriting the house. And then it just goes like full bore into them investigating everything. And that's where it becomes a lot of fun.
Cool.
Would I suggest it? Yeah, absolutely. I really enjoyed the hell out of this movie. This is we've talked about Dark Coast, I guess it's a division of Tri-Coast. We've talked about a couple of their other movies here on the podcast, and they're really fun to work with. But this one in particular, I enjoyed the hell out of, and might actually find myself watching again down the road. So if you see it pop up, give it a shot. It was Case 347, and it's definitely got a recommendation for me. If I had to review it right now, I'd probably give it... probably like a 3.25
out of what?
Out of I don't know, alien conspiracies, I guess.
Not a top flight alien conspiracy, but a solid one.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I wouldn't put it on par with something like the best found footage I've ever seen, but it's definitely it's not Creep. It's not like your original Blair Witch, but it's a lot of fun for a found footage film. You shouldn't immediately dismiss it. It was good. I enjoyed it.
Excellent.
You guys want to jump into some horror headlines?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Horror headlines.
All right. Horror headlines time. It's been a while since I've been on top of these horror headlines. It feels good. It feels good to be back. Post work. Post all that nonsense. Anyways, start off with some box office stuff. I know you guys touched on this a little bit last week, but we just kind of want to follow it up with a little bit more of what's going on here. It's a rough time for film releases. There's a ton that Corona is canceling or delaying. Given kind of how unique this situation is, it's really interesting to kind of look at exactly what's happening with movie releases and how this pandemic is affecting sales numbers. Considering we've got some... news that kind of illustrates the theaters are now closing their doors completely. This could be very well the last horror box office that we get for weeks or even months.
Yeah.
Or ever. No, I'm just kidding.
Ever.
Forever.
The movies are canceled.
The only film really relevant to cover right now is Universal Blumhouse's The Hunt. The film reportedly cost about $15 million and has already been part of some controversy before even being released. Fans of the cast or people that might have been following this news on their own might remember that this was initially supposed to release last year, but was pushed back due to political blowback. Universal.
At which point? I tried and failed to start the hashtag free Betty trend on Twitter.
Oh. A for effort, Sam.
One day we'll have the power to be able to manipulate the Twitter hordes. One day. Universal might find themselves regretting the fact that they didn't just stick to their guns and embrace the original release a little bit more right now, because the film opened to about $5 million here. It needs about $35 million to break even, so it'll need a huge boost from international numbers to make it. Considering the state of emergency that's been issued practically worldwide, I think it's safe to say that this film is probably not going to recuperate its losses. Although we'll see how it does, I guess, on the VOD market, because they're charging $20 for it, and apparently a lot of people are on some of the horror groups that I belong to are saying that it's worth the $20.
Really?
Yeah,
I've heard it's decent. I've heard it loses its message a little bit, kind of towards the middle reveal.
Didn't really expect this film to like have much of a message. I just wanted to see it.
Does it have a message?
Apparently, from what I've read about it, it tries, and then it just kind of loses tack all the ways into the movie. But I've heard it's fun.
That sounds about right.
I'll probably check it out.
The good news is, like I said, that Universal has decided to break their theatrical release system, put this out on VOD rental starting last Friday. So 3/20 will be the day before this is released. It's a high price point, though, with a 48-hour rental costing you $19.99. I doubt that's going to help a lot, because I think if they would have competed with a standard movie ticket prices, they probably would have brought in a lot of additional income.
$19.99 seems a bit high.
It does, yeah.
That's pretty steep to just rent it.
Well, like, I think the logic is that you'll be able to rent it and they can't keep track of how many people are watching it in your home at that one point in time. So they charged twice as much. And with the thought process being at least two people are probably going to be watching it when you rent it in each home. So I guess that makes sense.
Right. I guess so.
I don't know.
I would just watch it on my own.
Yeah, because people that like horror movies obviously only live with other people that like horror movies.
Right? Or that can sit down and watch a movie together.
Right.
Ben and I never get to watch movies together anymore.
I don't know. We'll see how it does on that. I think more places are starting to do stuff like that. Disney is releasing a lot of stuff onto Disney Plus.
Yeah.
I know their new Pixar film is going to be on Disney Plus in like two more weeks, and that just came out in theaters. So it seems like a lot of places are starting to do this, but there's a huge difference between putting something on a subscription service that's significantly less expensive or throwing it on VOD for one-time 48-hour rental for $19.99.
Yeah.
I feel like if they would have just put this stuff on Netflix or on Amazon and just been like, you know what, here, we'll just take the Prime money and cut our losses and you do you, but I don't know. I don't know enough about that to be able to tell how much, at least like how much they'd get paid out for something like that.
Well, I think it obviously would accelerate the digital release date to end up on any of those platforms anyway, since they're just saying go ahead and watch it. Where can you get them online?
You can get them on Amazon.
Okay, so it's currently on Amazon already. You just have to pay for it.
Yeah.
The $20.
Yeah. Okay. So it's any sort of, like, if you have cable, you can rent them through, like, those VOD services on, like, any cable provider.
I did see it on Fios, yeah.
And then, Amazon as well. I think they said, like, it's on, like, YouTube and a few other ones as well. Like, but you had to obviously pay for the rental through them as well. Next up. I've got a new segment that I'm calling Corona Cancellations.
That's bleak.
We're using this segment to keep you apprised of all the delays, cancellations, and closings that might affect the horror community due to rampant plague.
It's almost like we're living in a horror movie.
Yeah, kind of, right? Like, I really do feel like this is like the time that we're living in right now. Every time you watch a new zombie movie and they show all the news footage during like the opening reels, that's the time that we're in right now.
This is the first day and 28 days later.
Yeah, exactly. AMC has decided to close its doors completely. Initially, they decided to reduce their seating capacity by about 50%, but the virus is still spreading and social distancing requirements become more and more extreme. America's most prominent theater company has decided to close the store for at least 6 weeks with the possibility of up to 12 weeks. Cinemark and Regal Theaters have followed suit as well. Netflix's Stranger Things and The Witcher have both been delayed. Right now, the shows are expected to be on a hiatus for at least 2 weeks. In addition, the following genre shows have also been delayed. Fear of the Walking Dead, Snowpiercer, which I didn't know they were doing a TV show out of, but apparently they are.
Yeah.
The Walking Dead, Y, Doom Patrol, The Handmaid's Tale, Lucifer, and C.
I'm very upset that The Walking Dead franchise at all gave in to cancellations for this, because this seems like exactly the kind of thing that would play right into their marketing materials.
Absolutely.
10 more years.
Look at how irresponsible we are. 10 more years. That's the marketing for this.
Just watch us.
Yeah, just watch. Never stop. We are The Walking
Dead.
There's
nothing on TV. By the end of this year, when we're all officially on like a global lockdown, there's nothing on TV except for The Walking Dead.
No, oh my God,
I'm convinced that the longer this goes on and the less new TV we have to watch, they're going to start re-releasing old TV. So all like the like younger millennials and like, you know, kids that didn't grow up with stuff like Matlock will be able to tune in and just hate it. We'll understand how much we hated afternoon TV when Matlock's on.
Wait, I'm sorry. You didn't like Matlock?
Not growing up as a kid.
I hope they bring back the Golden Girls.
Oh God.
It's still on. What are you talking about? It's
what channel is it on?
Like every day. It's on, I don't know, some weird channel. It's on like all the time.
Okay, I gotta get back on cable, I guess.
It's not gonna pull me in.
The Golden Girls?
No, it's not gonna pull me in. If it's on like streaming service, I'd probably watch it. But
God, okay. You're such a Blanche.
Oh yeah, you're right. You're right. With theaters closing their doors, it only makes sense that movies are going to get completely delayed as well. Fox and Disney have announced a few films that have been delayed indefinitely, one of which is actually kind of funny. The other is a complete bummer. The New Mutants will never actually see the light of day. Sam, you were right.
I'm so happy about
that. That brings me so much fucking joy.
Antlers, that really sucks. I do want to see that pretty badly.
Yeah.
And then Nightmare Alley.
Was that about a haunted bowling alley?
No, I think that was like a Guillermo del Toro thing.
Oh.
Yeah. It was either him or Robert Rodriguez. I can't remember.
Okay.
Lionsgate has announced delays of Antebellum, which is supposed to come out in April 24th. Spiral from the Book of Saw has been delayed. That was supposed to come out May 15th. And then Run on May 8th. Paramount Pictures has delayed A Quiet Place Part 2, but that's pretty common knowledge at this point.
Yep.
And Warner Brothers has delayed The Matrix 4 and The Batman. So,
welcome. I completely forgot that they were making another Matrix.
Yeah. Welcome to the new state of things, everybody. No more
fun movies. Is this the bug in the code? Are we experiencing the bug in the code?
Maybe. It's a possibility. As news mounts and more delays are announced, we'll be sure to share them with you. I'm doing my best to stay on top of video game delays as well, but while there have been a lot of rumors circulating, nothing yet has been announced in terms of delays for those. A sequel to a movie that I watched pretty recently and enjoyed the hell out of, The Velocipastor, is in the works. Fans of shit-tier B-horror films might notice this one in passing while perusing their recommended films on Amazon Prime. That's how this cheesy flick managed to sink its claws into me. The Velocipastor, which I ended up thinking was way better than it had any right being, has a sequel that's already been written. The original film's director and writer, Brendan Steer, has shared some hints of it on his Twitter account, announcing his intention to begin filming the sequel sometime in the near future. There's no word of a day and date, and even if there was, I'd take it with a grain of salt right now, considering nothing's capable of filming. But you can bet we'll be staying on top of this as more info is announced. Although, to be completely honest, with as tongue-in-cheek as the original film is, I wouldn't put it past Brendan Steer to be able to film something in today's coronavirus world and make a reference to it pretty well. I don't know. I guess I can say I'm officially a sucker for shitty, gory dino flicks.
What's it about?
It's literally what you think it's about. It's about a pastor who gets cut by a velociraptor claw and can turn into a velociraptor at will, and then uses his powers for good to kill people that deserve it. And along the way, he meets a sex worker and basically becomes the next Jesus.
But does he do the velociraptor screech saying the power of Christ compels you?
No, he does not.
That's disappointing. See, that should be a subtitles Easter egg right there.
It should. It should, but it's not. But it could be in the sequel. We'll see.
Brendan Steer, if you happen to include that, I would like you to send a check to me, please. I will take $7.
That's your royalty fee? $7?
That's my royalty fee. $7 for my contribution to your new film.
Todd McFarlane announces some serious talent has left the Spawn reboot. we've discussed this film in depth on and off for almost 2 years now on the podcast, and I'm about ready to put it into retirement alongside New Mutants.
Yeah, I have a note that I think it's about time we give this the New Mutants treatment.
Yeah. But here's one last piece of dour news before I send this one to the gallows. In a recent interview, McFarlane announced that the film lost some Academy Award winning talent, keeping it vague and not naming names. It's natural to assume that Jamie Foxx had decided to bow out, but it turns out it's not the case. Yet, comicbook.com has done some digging and found that the lost talent was actually a writer. McFarlane later clarified and stated that we had people willing to fund this movie as long as we had this guy attached, but schedules were conflicting and things had to change. That's how close we are to getting this thing off the ground. The big takeaway from this is that McFarlane is finally starting to see the light. He's bringing in help to get this thing off the ground, and it's becoming more, I guess he's becoming more willing to relinquish control.
I mean, if I had to write a movie about Spawn and Spawn's not even in it, I'd fucking quit too.
It was something that was causing a ton of problems for this film, and part of the reason that he hadn't found much in terms of success or funding. But here's to hoping this continues and he can actually get the project off the ground. Until that moment, we are officially going to stop talking about this unless something really major comes out.
Like awesome. 20 million people all give him $1.
Exactly.
That's right.
And then finally, we got some Vidya news. Many gaming nerds out there know at one point Hideo Kojima, acclaimed creator of the Metal Gear franchise, Zone of Enders, and the recent Death Stranding, was at one point signed on to reboot the Silent Hill franchise. He even got a conceptual demo off the ground featuring the one and only Norman Reedus and Guillermo del Toro attached to the project. That's a hard... I don't know. It died a hard, long death. That thing was so promising, and everybody was so hyped for it. And then, like a year later, it was finally confirmed that it wasn't happening anymore. And that just fucking sucked. Anyways, that hasn't stopped Konami from talking about rebooting the franchise. But Konami has just been a shell of what it once was, releasing mediocre cash grab games and putting most of its focus on pachinko machines, which are basically a popular form of gambling in Japan. But now it looks like the project may be handed off to Sony. So Sony's apparently inquiring about purchasing the rights away from Konami directly, with both a remake of the original game and a reboot of the franchise possibly becoming PlayStation exclusives. If this is true, that not only means that Konami won't be able to sully this remake, it also means that Hideo Kojima might become involved again, which is incredibly exciting. Nothing's confirmed, though. And so for right now, all we can do is foam at the mouth and dream of the possibility. But that would be awesome if that could happen again. I would be genuinely interested in jumping back into the Silent Hill franchise, especially after the way that they rebooted Resident Evil. Mm. It'd be a lot of fun to jump back into those.
You are a big fan of that. You've been talking about that one a lot.
Yeah. I'm really looking for it. It's like another week, 2 weeks. And then I'll be playing the hell out of Resident Evil 3. I'm so excited. I can't wait to play games about viruses while I'm living a life about viruses.
Such a sadist.
Sam, we got some now slang for this week?
Actually, this week we don't. Nothing new this week. But as we mentioned, The Hunt and Invisible Man are both available on VOD in response to theater shutting down everywhere.
Okay.
I'll probably be checking out Invisible Man, if not both of them, at some point, since it doesn't look like I'm going anywhere anytime soon.
For sure. Well, Corona strikes again, folks. Don't know what to tell you. We're jumping into this week's main event.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to tonight's main event.
All right. This week's film is I'm excited to talk about this one. I really do love this movie. So good choice. I was surprised to hear you guys say that this was going to be the one that we were covering for this week.
We did this as like a welcome back for you, because we know that you wanted to do this for a long time.
Yeah, dude, I fucking love this movie so much. The Descent.
It's,
a little movie that some of you might have seen, came out in 2005. It's directed by Neil Marshall, written by Neil Marshall as well. We're going to talk about some members of the production team that we don't normally talk about, mainly because of the fact that sound and cinematography play such an important role in this film. So I want to give some shout-outs to the Foley artists. We have Julie Ankerson, who's the direct artist, and then Stuart Bagshaw, who did all the recording. And then cinematography is by Sam McCurdy, who was the director of photography. We'll talk a little bit after we get through the synopsis about why, I guess, cinematography and sound are so important in this. The movie stars Shauna McDonald as Sarah, Natalie Mendoza as Juno, Alex Reed as Beth, Saskia Mulder as Rebecca, Miana... I don't know if it's Miana or Miana, Burning as Sam, and then Nora Jane Nooney as Holly. This movie came out at a point in time when, let's think, we had the extreme wave of French films coming out at the same time. Eli Roth was gaining his footing. R-rated horror was becoming a very, very hot topic, and we were seeing a lot of extreme films tending towards more extreme examples of gore and violence. I'd say it was actually probably like one of the turning points for horror, because as I am well on record on this podcast, I really don't like a whole lot of stuff pre-2005, like mid-90s.
What, you don't?
Mid-90s into the early 2000s. Point. Yeah, this is the beginning of my cutoff point.
This is where it picked back up for you.
Yeah. This is where I started jumping back in and really enjoying horror films again. Neil Marshall, this is his second film. What a fucking film. Can I just say that? Can I say for your second film, for something that is usually designated the sophomore slump, he came out with The Descent, which might actually be his best film. Before this, he did, what was it, Dog Soldiers? Dog Soldiers, by the way, if you haven't seen it, it's fun. It's a good movie. Not nearly as good as this, but very good. It's up on Shudder right now. If you haven't seen it, I strongly suggest giving it a shot. But Neil Marshall was actually designated as one of the Splat Pack, which is a coined phrase from somebody over, I think it was like Total Film or something. It was just when horror films started dropping the PG-13 ratings and jumping back into full visceral, like bloody, gory horror. A whole collection of directors were designated part of the Splat Pack, including Neil Marshall, Eli Roth, Rob Zombie, Alexander Aja, Lee Whannell. Basically, just a whole bunch of people that James Wan was initially part of the Splat Pack, although he's kind of moved away from that. But a bunch of people were kind of considered part of this, I guess, new exploration of horror that started in 2005. The movie itself, it was released at a film festival. Let's see, Dead by Dawn. It premiered on July 6th in 2005. And it did really well. It received a whole bunch of commendations and before we're getting a national or international release, where it sits at 85% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's a movie that I think doesn't appear to be all that much on the surface. And then the more times you watch it, the more you're like, oh, this is actually like a commentary on like grief and mental illness and, like, I guess overcoming the obstacles that life throws at you on both, like, a mental and physical level.
How fitting for today.
Right.
So are you saying that I might run into, like, weird blind albino crawlers in various parts of my house?
Yeah, if you don't
Once Palmer starts gaslighting us a la the lighthouse and convincing us that we've been here for 7 years.
If you don't start keeping your mental health in check and stop working until 7 p.m. every night.
You might become the creepy crawlers.
Exactly.
Sam.
Exactly.
The albino. They are bald.
That's true. So once I shave my face, I'm starting down the path of the transformation.
Oh, shave your face and take out your contacts.
I just imagine since it's been so long since you've shaved your beard that your skin underneath the beard has never received any sunlight. So it's just like, it will be the color of these creatures.
It probably is the same color as my ass. So I have a little goofball synopsis for this one. I was trying to come up with one the same way that I have for the movies we've been doing recently. And Palmer, I sent you a clip that I want you to insert here.
Yeah.
Because I can't really explain this movie in any way better than these 90s commercials did for us.
Okay, here we go.
You creepin', oh, I'm so creepin' and crawlin'.
Creep attack!
Creepy crawlers!
It's the Creepy Crawlers Bug Maker. You can create a creepy insect army of goo-filled crawlers.
To smash and splat!
Grind them up with the Creepy Bug Grinder.
Make them again!
These crawlers go smack and splat!
Epic splat!
Creepy Crawlers, Bug Maker, Grinder, Smasher, Molds, and Refills. Each sold separately. Out now from Moose.
So Creepy Crawlers, that's what you thought of the entire time that you were watching this movie?
The whole time.
The whole time.
The whole time. And it got, like, the further into the movie it got, and the more you saw them, and they were, like, covered in that, like, gelatinous ooze.
Yeah.
Right? And as she pops up from, like, the blood lake, like she was just made by the Creepy Crawler oven. Yeah, that's all I thought.
I can see it. I can see it.
Yeah, so can I. I mean, I think it's fitting. For sure.
I kind of want a creepy crawler machine now. I wonder if you can still buy them.
They're wildly expensive.
Why? Because you have to buy them secondhand? I don't know if they still manufacture them anymore.
I don't think they do. I saw one on Amazon for like $175.
What?
It went. I mean, it's the same way as like all those old board games. Like, you remember that game Crossfire?
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dude. You'll get caught up in the crossfire.
Crossfire! Yeah.
That sorry,
like
don't.
$400 on Amazon. It's fucking wild.
Last review for this item is from 2013. Yeah. I guess they don't make them anymore. But looking at the box cover for this, it's very of its time.
So there's one, Jack's Creepy Crawler Bug Maker, available on Amazon right now. It's considered a collectible, so there's two of them available at
$155.
Wow.
Good lord. The original.
So you didn't eat the Creepy Crawlers,
played with them. Yeah, they were just like this like gelatinous mush that you could stomp on and squish and do all sorts of crazy stuff.
Okay.
It appealed to boys.
Oh, absolutely.
I guess. At least when I was a kid, I really wanted one. I was like, oh, this appeals to me.
I don't actually think I knew anybody that had one.
No.
I didn't know anybody that had one either.
I feel like as a parent, my mom is probably like, didn't want all that gelatinous goo getting into her.
Shag carpet plus gelatinous goo does not make for a good time, I don't think.
No, no.
I'm just going to throw that out there. I feel like as a child, I would be like, I hate you. But as an adult, I'm like, I totally understand you. but moving off the subject of creepy crawlers and back onto the descent, which is what we're covering this week.
Back onto the subject of descent crawlers.
Descent crawlers. On their way back from whitewater rafting, Juno and Beth and Sarah, along with her husband Paul and their daughter Jessica, are involved in a car accident when Paul is distracted. So basically, like, they're discussing about what their daughter's birthday at that point, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're asking, turned around asking her daughter if she wants to invite a whole bunch of people over and blah, blah, blah. And it seems like her daughter might be just a tad antisocial. because she's just like, are you going to invite anybody? What was it? Like, are you actually going to invite anybody this time or something? Or will there be any boys there or anything like that? And she's kind of like trying to figure things out. And her daughter seems a little bit reluctant, but they're discussing it, trying to figure out what they're going to do for her birthday. When all of a sudden, as she's leaning over and asking her husband, Paul, if he's doing okay, he just says he's tired, and they're talking, and he takes his eyes off the road briefly and just slams into another car. And very much like the opening of Inside, we get an aerial shot of the two cars, and it's like Inside meets Final Destination, right? So it's like...
Yeah, absolutely Final Destination.
It's like that scene from Final Destination 2 where, like, you know, the logs are coming off the truck, but in this it's just brass poles, and so they go through his head. And that's the end of Paul. And then you realize...
Did it also go through her daughter's head, though?
We don't see it, but we do know that her daughter obviously died from the accident.
Right.
But they don't really go into too much detail about, like...
About how she died.
Yeah, about how she died. So I just assume it was wounds sustained in the accident. I don't remember if she was wearing her seatbelt or not in the back, so that could have... Maybe something.
She probably was.
Was that kill in Final Destination 1 or 2?
Two.
With the log.
Two.
Okay. That's the opening of 2. So after the accident, Sarah wakes up in the hospital. She has that like mental image of her daughter blowing out all her birthday candles and then wakes up in the hospital, goes outside. She's very disoriented in the hallway and everything, and the hallway lights start to shut off, and then she is in the embrace of one of her friends all of a sudden and realizes that she's kind of lost everything.
Thanks, Beth.
Yeah, she's caught by Beth. And so a year later, Sarah, Juno, Beth, as well as friends Sam and Rebecca and a newcomer named Holly are all reunited at the cabin in the Appalachian Mountains, specifically Chattanooga National Park. Mm-hmm. They are getting ready to go on a spelunking adventure. They're getting ready to dive into some caves. And
that does not seem fun at all.
Yeah, dude, this actually seems like pretty extreme.
Yeah, it's a really interesting way to... Because the assumption is that, like, this is just what they do, but Sarah's been kind of, like, in isolation ever since the accident. And well, we're going from whitewater rafting to just, like, cave diving.
Yeah, well, whitewater rafting in and of itself is quite extreme. So they're women who are into extreme sports.
Yeah, this is definitely their outlet.
One of the women's a base jumper. I think that was Holly, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So she's, like, the most extreme of the extreme.
She looks like the most extreme, you know?
It's what her and... Juno, right? That are like the two like super extreme.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the group seems to kind of just like tag along for the journey. But this one seems like it might be a little like heavy for them in general, right? Because we get that line from Beth that's like, what the hell? Like, I'm an English teacher, not a tomb raider.
And then the one girl who brought her sister, right? Her sister's very inexperienced spelunker, so this is supposed to be just be like a easy day trip kind of thing.
Right. I think it's supposed to be, but they lose their routes and everything.
Have either one of you ever done any like cave exploring?
Hell no.
Type stuff?
Fuck that, no.
I've been to Luray Caverns.
Yeah, that's about...
Does that count?
No. I explored a cave in Gibraltar also, but that was also just like Luray Caverns where you walk in and walk around and stare at stalactites.
Gotcha. Yeah, I've done it once. Nothing like this. Like, I think the smallest gap that I had to climb through was still big enough for me to like comfortably get through.
That's what she said. No, I'm just kidding.
Hey-o.
Hey-o.
But no, it can be a lot of fun. But like this, I will never understand why anybody was like, hey, you know what would be a really fun, cool thing to do? Let's go like squeeze our bodies through jagged rocks and maybe get stuck and die.
Yeah, they had me like, I think it'd be okay up until the point where like when they first jump down into the cavern, right? And it's like a big open area that I could maybe do. But once they have to start maneuvering through those very small holes, I'm totally done. I'm out. Yeah. I don't want a Chilean miner myself into like, what was it, that soccer team that got stuck in the caves?
Yeah. I can't remember where that was. Was it Chile?
No, I think they were Filipino.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, they were from the Philippines. That's right.
Yeah, I don't want to be, I don't want a Filipino soccer team myself into a fucking cave.
Right. So after a night of partying and catching up at the cabin, the next day they hike up to the cave entrance and decide that it's time to descend. While in the cave.
And don't forget about their picture.
Oh yeah,
their group photo.
They get a group photo. Well, it also explores like a little bit of the friend dynamics. So you see that Sarah has actually grown pretty distant from pretty much everybody. It seems like she's pretty isolated. Although, like so you had mentioned that Sarah has been like totally isolated. I don't think that's quite the case because she they mentioned that they went to Dublin, and that Juno like left immediately.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that's true.
So they've had some like at least one other interaction as a group with each other,
but this is like her first big foray back out into the world.
Right. Yeah. So this is her. So I guess it's just like because they were her and Beth, Sarah and Beth were talking about how like Juno always wants to do the extreme stuff, and she never wants to do anything fun. And then yeah, she brings up the Dublin thing, and so it seems like it like the girls take turns picking the kind of adventure that they want to do.
Yeah.
And some sound more tame than others. Would be basically if this was our group, it would be like, all right, Juno is not allowed to plan anything anymore.
Yeah, Juno doesn't get a say in what we do.
We get this scene where Juno apologizes to Sarah for not being there after the accident, but Sarah's pretty distant. She gets up and she's like, oh, I'm just going to go explore the cave. And honestly, I'd be the same way. Like, if you're not there for me, like when I need you at my darkest, like, what the fuck are you doing here now? Don't apologize. Yeah. So I get it. You know, I understand why she gives Juno the cold shoulder, but she uses this as like an excuse to kind of get up and explore the cave. And so she thinks that she found the right passage. It may or may not have actually been the right passage. We're going to go with not considering where they end up. But but there's a comment that Juno makes talking about how she hates using books as a reference because there's too much left up to interpretation. And so they're just going off this cave based on what they've read. They actually don't know anything about this cave whatsoever aside from what they read in a book.
It's so dumb.
So I don't know. There's a whole bunch of red flags getting raised from the start of this film.
This is like the least safe equivalent I can imagine of like going to IKEA and buying some furniture and just throwing the instructions in the trash and saying, I got this. I've seen these things put together before. I can figure it out.
Right. Right.
This is the spelunking version of that.
So the group moves through this narrow passage that Sarah found, and it collapses behind them, trapping them. After a long argument, Juno admits that she's led the group into an unknown cave system instead of the fully explored cave system that they had originally planned to visit, and that the rescue is, it's impossible. Nobody's coming
God
to rescue them.
God damn it. I would fucking kick the shit out of that
chick.
Yeah, dude,
I'd be so pissed. She then tells Sarah that she led them into the unknown caves in the hopes of restoring their relationship. And Sarah's just like, fuck you.
She tries to blame it on Holly, right?
Yeah.
Saying that the other one was the tourist trap.
Yep.
Oh, that's right.
And so she's...
Well, now there's these very inexperienced freaking spelunkers down in this unexplored cave. It's so dangerous.
Well, it's not just dangerous. Like, this cave looks like it would be super dangerous for people that have tons of experience. Like,
yeah.
Nothing in this seems easy.
Down and take my bags off.
Yeah, dude, this is like it turns into some genuine like Lara Croft fucking like Indiana Jones type shit as they progress further through this cave system. So as the group presses forward, hopes of finding an exit, they discover a bit of climbing equipment from a previous caver and a cave painting that suggests that an exit does exist, but they gotta find it, right?
Good luck with that.
Holly, she's thinking she sees sunlight. She runs ahead but falls down into a hole and breaks her leg. This scene is fucking hard.
Gnarly.
Yeah, this scene is hard to watch.
Her shin bone comes out of her leg.
Yeah, those compound fractures, man, they're always like the worst. I could watch like people getting disemboweled and like fucking their limbs amputated and decapitated, all that shit. But the second you show me a compound fracture on a screen, I cringe like no tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's ooh. It's rough.
That was palms are sweaty.
Yeah, dude, absolutely. Mom's spaghetti all over the place. So as the others help Holly, Sarah wanders off and observes a pale humanoid creature drinking at a pool before it scampers away. So this is kind of like the first introduction. Well, not the first introduction. We see the creature in the background at one point, but nobody acknowledges its existence. Nobody sees it. So this is the first time that Sarah is really seeing this creature or anything else might be down here with them. So it's drinking from a pool before it scampers away. Later, the group comes across a den of animal bones and are suddenly attacked by a creature. I guess they call them crawlers. So Holly is killed. Her neck is ripped out of her body and then she's dragged away. Sarah runs, falls down a hole and is knocked unconscious.
So to touch on, I know you had mentioned like the cinematography and everything. This is my favorite shot in the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
Is when they first go into that cavern and see all the animal bones and everything, and the camera is like real low on the ground and panning around them, but everything above them is super dark, so like it shows that it's a really big room, but you still can't see jack shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then as far as like the sound editing, you've got like the sounds of the crawlers like skittering around the edges of the frame, like. That's my favorite scene without a doubt in this whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, he wanted, I guess one of the big things for Neil Marshall was that he wanted to make sure that all the shots in this film used only light from sources that were legitimate. Right. So like they weren't going to have like, it wasn't going to be like a lot of like studio films, like for instance, when you're out in the middle of the woods in a Friday the 13th film, but everything is very clearly illuminated by moonlight.
Yeah.
Because
the moon's like 7 feet away.
Yeah, right. He wanted nothing to do with that. So it's really interesting to watch how they get all these sources of light to be enough to show the viewer what's coming. And they come up with some pretty creative ways of doing it, you know, using the night vision on their cameras, using the flares and stuff like that. But it also creates this extra heightened sense of isolation and claustrophobia, not just because they're in the caves, but also because of the fact that that everything's so dark and everything's so like tight. And aside from a few scenes where you see them illuminating entire rooms because they just light up a flare and you see how massive some of these caverns are, everything's just so... yeah, it's just so claustrophobic. It's one of the best parts of this movie. So yeah, I mean, it's I don't know. I really enjoyed the cinematography for this, and the sound really adds a whole nother level too, because of the fact that it's just like you don't see anything, a whole lot of stuff on the screen, but you hear a lot of stuff, especially during like the there's a couple of scenes where things go like completely like borderline pitch black and they're just listening to these creatures around them. And it's so good, especially if you've got like headphones on or like good surround sound and you can hear things like on all angles. It's really good. Sarah runs during all this. She falls down a hole. She's knocked unconscious. Juno, she's trying to prevent Holly's body from being dragged away. She kills a crawler with her pickaxe, and then, startled, she turns around and accidentally stabs Beth through the neck. And one of the most... this is kind of the turning point for Juno, right? Like, you think maybe she can be kind of redeemed.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she'll be able to do something to patch her relationship up with Sarah, and then she kills Beth. And regardless of whether or not it's an accident, at this point she's responsible for everything that's gone on. She's lied to them. She's led them into a cave that's not actually mapped. They're now all in danger of their lives, not just because of the how dangerous the cave is, but because of these crawlers. And now she accidentally kills somebody. This is kind of like, in my eyes, this is it. Like, there's no coming back for Juno at this point.
Well, and the fact too that she just leaves her, right?
Yeah.
So it's not even that, you know, maybe one could understand given the circumstances, you know, that she accidentally stabbed her friend with a pickaxe, but then she just leaves her.
Yeah.
Like, that's fucked up.
Yeah, it's really fucked up. And it kind of shows a little bit more about Juno's character and why. So apparently, like, Juno just as a character can't deal with trauma and stress, and her only reaction is to run away from it. And that's exactly what she did with Sarah. It's exactly what she's doing with Beth.
Like the only thing she fails to do after this is to blame the death of Beth on the crawlers. She's already blamed Beth for the reason why they're in the caves in the first place.
Right.
Right.
She's like, oh, you said it was a tourist trap, so I brought us here.
Right.
And she's like, well, if you weren't acting like the crawler, I wouldn't have killed you.
So she leaves
out, but she's trying to explain this to Sarah later.
Beth collapses with Juno's pendant in her hand, and a traumatized Juno flees while Beth begs her not to leave. Yeah,
that's ruthless.
It's really one of the more like
fucking lasts forever too. Like when you see the two of them staring at each other, and you see the pickaxe like poking out of the front of her neck.
Yeah. Sarah awakens to find herself in a den of human and animal carcasses and witnesses Holly's body being eaten by a group of crawlers. Juno discovers markings pointing to a specific path through the caves, and after regrouping with Sam and Rebecca and realizing that the crawlers use sound to hunt, Juno tells them that the markings she discovered may point to the way out, but she won't leave without Sarah. Yeah, right.
Sure.
Yeah, right. Meanwhile, Sarah encounters Beth, who tells Sarah that Juno wounded and abandoned her. Beth also gives her Juno's pendant, and Sarah recognizes as a gift from Paul, realizing that Juno had an affair with Paul before his death. So now Juno's fucking cheated. You've been like the other woman on top of everything else. What the fuck, Juno?
You kind of have an idea that she did that, because there's at one point when they're talking about Paul's death and she was like, we all lost somebody then, and she makes her face, right? And so
real weird look at each other.
Uh-huh. So Beth also knew, I believe.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I think she was figuring it out at that point, yeah.
Yeah. But now
that's a really weird thing to say to somebody. Like, we all lost something in your car accident that killed your spouse and kid.
Right. Like, you're like, okay, that's weird.
You're really good friends with my husband, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. But now it's finally confirmed, and we can hate Juno even more.
Yeah. This is just piling the shit onto Juno's fucking shit pile over here. In pain and not wanting to be eaten by the crawlers, Beth begs Sarah to euthanize her. Sarah reluctantly does so by bashing her head in with a rock. So Sarah is just experiencing more and more loss, right? Like, so she just lost like the one friend that I think was actually her friend in this group.
Yeah.
She just forced to kill her.
And because she asked her to. Ugh, I don't know if I'd be able to do that.
You don't think you'd be able to do that in that situation?
I don't know. I'd want to say that I could, but I don't know. If Ben's like, I need you to kill me, I'd be like, oh, I'd have a hard time with it.
You know, I don't think you're supposed to have an easy time with it.
Oh, sure, no problem, bro.
Dilemma.
Yeah,
it's the what?
The Shaun of the Dead dilemma.
Yeah,
where they're both sitting down there at the end with the gun. Like, could you? And I guess the question is, you know, would Sarah have to kill herself too in this case? But like, even without that, it's just like, I don't know if I could kill you guys. If we ever found ourselves in a situation like this, unless Palmer, you just started going off on one of your tangents.
I probably would. If that's what it took to get you to kill me, I'd just be screaming about how Alicia Owen did nothing wrong until you fucking smashed my head in.
Well, and that's a pretty aggressive way to do it too. Like maybe if I had to just shoot someone or I don't know, smother them with a pillow, but just bashing someone's head over with a rock, like that's aggro.
She only hits her once, right?
Yeah, but it's a big old fucking rock, dude. Like, I think like that's really boulder. All. Yeah, that's really just all you
imagine.
Need.
Imagine it's just like the circumstance where like you do it once and it's just like, ah, fuck.
Oh, see, I feel like that's what I would do.
Oh, like you didn't, like you missed the first time and you're like only
hit like a little bit. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, all right, so I broke your nose and collapsed your eye socket, but you're still clearly alive and in worse shape than you were 30 seconds ago. So let me haul off and do it again.
Yeah. Let me go find another rock. Hold on one second. I'll be right back.
Yeah. I feel like if I could do it cleanly, it wouldn't, like, it would be extremely hard, and I would definitely have to deal with like some therapy afterwards.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But if I had to fucking like do it multiple times, like if it wasn't a clean kill, oh yeah, dude, that would devastate me. That would devastate me. Sarah then encounters a family of crawlers, but manages to kill them all, becoming covered in blood in the process. Afterwards, she has a psychotic breakdown. It took her this long. Is Sarah such a strong character in this film? You want to talk about like strong fucking like female protagonist, dude? Like, absolutely. It took all this, killing your friend, realizing your husband had an affair, getting stuck in this bullshit cave, like all this just nonsense after nonsense after nonsense, for at this point she finally has a psychotic breakdown.
Right. It took quite a bit.
It did.
She made it a hell of a lot further than I would have.
Yeah, right. I would have just like been collapsed in the fetal position at some point. Just like
Sam
like,
would have given up literally as soon as he got to the bottom of the cave.
No, what? I would have made it to the bottom. I already said it. Like you would have gotten to that point, and it's just like, oh, this is not like nobody's ever been in this cave before. I'm just gonna sit down right here. I'm gonna take off my pack. I'm gonna pull out my granola bar, and you guys just come find me when you figure this shit out.
Sounds good.
You remember when we went to Red Vein and I grabbed Mark and threw him in front of me like a meat shield?
The chainsaw moment.
Yeah, I would basically just like have like pieces of Mark like covering me.
Just a Mark armor.
Yeah, just a Mark armor. Assuming Mark was there. Oh God. Now I have to take Mark with me everywhere just in case this situation happens again.
Mark is like, I didn't sign up for this shit.
Yeah, exactly. Elsewhere, Juno, Sam, and Rebecca are all pursued by a large group of crawlers. When they reach a chasm, Sam tries to climb across but encounters a crawler scaling the ceiling. It rips her throat out and Sam stabs it before she bleeds to death in front of Juno and Rebecca. Rebecca is then dragged back and eaten alive as Juno escapes. Fucking Juno. Juno encounters Sarah and lies about her seeing Beth die. After defeating a group of crawlers, Sarah confronts Juno and revealing that she knows that Juno had wounded Beth and left her for dead, and about the affair. She then strikes Juno in the leg with a pickaxe and leaves her to die as a swarm of crawlers approaches. Juno is last heard screaming as Sarah manages to escape. Sarah falls down the hole and is knocked unconscious. She awakens again, clambers up a slope covered in bones, and escapes the cave. After pausing to recover her strength, Sarah runs out to her vehicle and speeds off. She pulls over to the side of the road and breaks down in tears. After a truck passes her, she opens the window, leans out, and vomits. And upon re-entering the car, she sees a hallucination of Juno sitting next to her and screams. Sarah wakes up in the cave, revealing that she was dreaming about the escape. She then sees a vision of Jessica's birthday cake and Jessica sitting across from her, which is just her torch. So her flashlight. The camera slowly cuts back or backs out as the crawlers are heard closing in on Sarah.
That's the original cut.
That's the original ending. That's the one that I think is actually like I go with that.
That one makes a lot more sense in this film. And so the version that I watched that's on Amazon does not end with that. It's got the US cut, which ends with the hallucination of Juno.
Right.
In the passenger seat.
Right.
So pretty much all they did was cut the rest of that out. But I think the original British cut makes a lot more sense, because the point where, and this is, you know, again, a big shout to, you know, the cinematography and everything for this movie, is after they fall down, or after the fight, I guess it's on the, like, ceiling of the cavern or whatever.
Right.
Or I guess even during, the camera work gets incredibly disorienting. And at this point, Sarah's already had her, like, last psychotic break.
Yeah.
And everything after this point gets incredibly disorienting. All the fight scenes. So you've got the ceiling where, like, the camera starts rotating and you can't tell if it's up or down half the time. There's the big fight in the, like, blood pool where, you know, there's so many cuts, it's really jarring and kind of hard to follow.
Right.
Like, up until this point, everything is actually kind of looked more like a typical movie. And then after Sarah loses her shit again, it all just kind of falls apart. And the camera work does a really good job of kind of like leaning real hard into that. So having the ending where, you know, she thinks she makes it out, but she's actually still in there works a lot better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you. I also just think it's like, I just think it's just a more poignant ending. And it opens up just a whole like bunch of possibilities, I think, in terms of how you can perceive this film and what's actually going on. But we'll get into a little bit more of that in just a little bit. Let's talk about the Crawlers a little. So apparently they were very inspired from by Nosferatu. So they had big old white eyes to begin with, but apparently that idea was done away with because this in concept it was a good idea, but when they actually got the actors into all this makeup, they realized that it looked kind of silly. So apparently it took 3.5 hours in makeup to transform an actor into a crawler. The actors also had to shave all of their body hair.
Itchy.
Yeah, right.
I hope they got paid well.
Yeah, and in spite of how convincing everything is, the film, none of the film was actually filmed in an actual cave. It was all done on sets, and none of the film was filmed in the U.S. either. So
where was it filmed?
UK, various spots throughout the UK.
Okay.
So is this just a British interpretation of what caves in the Appalachian Mountains look like?
I guess so, yeah.
I do appreciate when they're driving up to the caves, you get to hear the banjo music on the radio.
You can't go through the Appalachian Hills without hearing fucking banjo.
Yeah, it's your choices are that or just like some preacher yelling at you. That's yeah. So another interesting thing kind of about these creatures is that they were kept secret from the cast members until the first scene where they encountered them. So the cast was finally filming the scene where the girls first encountered the crawlers, and the girls were genuinely scared. They screamed from running off the set and everything. So like apparently this was a pretty big reveal for them as well, which I think is kind of interesting.
I can imagine.
And the scene where the crawler is first seen and none of the girls acknowledge its existence. They didn't acknowledge its existence because of the fact that none of them knew that the crawler was in that shot.
Oh.
Yeah. Which I think is also really cool.
I know it's not like often frowned upon because it oftentimes leads to like hearing stories about just how maniacally insane the directors are of movies after the fact.
Right.
But there is a small part of me that does enjoy the like a director gaslighting his entire cast.
Yep.
Also, it's funny to note that Shauna McDonald, who played Sarah, is actually very claustrophobic.
Oh, is she really?
So a lot of the scenes where she's like, that scene where she's like tightly, where she gets trapped in that tunnel very briefly, and she's like, I can't get out. Well, apparently, like, that wasn't really acting for her. Yeah, it's intense. I don't know. This movie is just one of those films where like you kind of like learn more about the background of it, and it's just, I don't know, it becomes a whole nother ball game. A few things that I kind of wanted to touch on with you guys. We'll get to the most lingering one here in just a second, which is basically just kind of like how you interpret the film in general, because there are several fan theories out there for just like there are there isn't any good horror movie. But let's talk about some of the other points first. The movie kind of deals a lot with sin, right? So these characters are all supposed to be good friends with each other, yet in a few cases they're backstabbing, they're cheating, their love really only seems to be kind of like surface deep. So what do we think about kind of how this movie explores relationships compared to a lot of other horror movies? And do we think that this movie has any sort of kind of like metaphorical things to say about relationships in general?
Hitting with the deep questions.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting too, because these girls are supposed to be a group of friends that they're, you know, it's not like they're just going out and having coffee. Like they do these very extreme activities together where you really are supposed to be, you know, a team and looking out for each other, but they definitely do not do that.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting. I don't know. So like a lot of people do think that this whole movie is just kind of a metaphor for, surviving grief. There's a big school of thought that's basically all this movie is about. There's also a big school of thought that this is actually about Sarah descending into madness and killing, being responsible for killing all of her friends, and that the crawlers don't actually exist.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, so
was that because she's the only one that like sees them and nobody believes her?
Right. Yeah, she's the only one that sees them. It's pointed out multiple times that nobody else has really encountered these things, and that whenever one of the friends die, or even if they die in groups, they all get cleaned up, right? There's no like surviving person aside from Juno, though. And Juno's genuinely afraid of her towards the end of this film. Like, Juno is scared of her. You can see it in the way that she looks at her, the way that she talks to her. Like, it's like Juno's running away from her, which she is doing throughout the course of the movie. Literally since the very beginning of the film, like when the accident happens, Juno's running away from Sarah. So there's a lot of speculation that Sarah is the one who's like responsible for all this, and that this is like the crawlers are just her.
That's manifesting her
grief. Like, yeah, her taking grief. taking it out on the group of friends. Which is why she's the only survivor and the only one that can escape it, because she crawls back up out of it, I guess. It turns from the descent into the ascent after she's done.
But I mean, depending on which ending you go by, she doesn't.
Right. Yeah. So the director actually likes the way that, I guess it's the second, not the...
So the U.S. ending is the one where she gets out, and the British ending is the one where she's still in the cave.
Right. So he said that he doesn't like the U.S. ending as much, but he appreciates the fact that it leaves more room for interpretation. So he's glad that he did that cut. But yeah, the British ending is a lot more definite, right? Like, she's getting surrounded. Like, the crawlers are definitely very real. Although it could just be her completely succumbing to madness at the end of that point, and and that being kind of the destruction of herself. I think there's kind of ways that you can interpret it with either ending. But what do you guys think about that? What do you guys think? Do you guys think that this is real, or do you guys think that this is all just in her head?
I mean, up until literally 30 seconds ago, I thought it was just a movie about creepy crawlers. But I guess it kind of makes sense. I could see that being a thing.
It's one of those things, like when you hear about that theory and then you go and you watch it again, you're like, oh shit.
Yeah. Right. I know, I'll have to go back and watch it again.
And so like the director acknowledges that he really was pushing for this to be an exploration of grief more than anything else in the film. But he himself, it doesn't really comment on it too much because he likes the fact that it's ambiguous to people.
Right.
So just like,
what do you think, Sam?
I mean, I like so I guess starting with the two different endings, you know, if you go with the American ending, I think it is dependent on which ending you're viewing it. Because with the American ending, where it cuts right after you see her hallucinating Juno's bloody face, you know, it's still, you know, now she's got like a new pile of grief that all of her friends are dead. And she's at least responsible for one of them because she stabbed Juno in the leg and left her there.
Right.
If you go with the British ending, I'm more inclined to agree that I think potentially it is a just genuine psychotic break, and she's imagining like all of her demons as these little weird creepy dudes.
Right.
And I mean, it does play well because the group does get split up a couple of times. And really the only person that seems to have any interest in like Sarah's well-being is killed by Juno, and at that point is where Sarah snaps, and I think everything kind of makes sense from that point, because nobody does see her, and the fact that he did kind of hide them from the cast when filming really does lend itself to play into that idea of just that, like, these things aren't real. It's just Sarah's a fucking lunatic now because she's just lost everything and completely snapped because her shitty fucking friend dragged her into a goddamn cave that nobody knows about.
So does that mean that Sarah killed Beth too then, and it wasn't actually Juno who killed Beth?
I still think that's Juno.
Okay, and then that's what set Sarah really off.
I think that's kind of where like that last straw happens.
Okay, I could see that. That makes sense.
Sorry, I'm getting distracted.
Also,
distracted.
Also, I'm just curious, like, if because Juno is the one that's like, you know, the question about whether or not, you know, is it all of these women have kind of their own agendas or whatnot, or is it just like every group of friends has that one fucking person in it that's just like shitty and awful, but nobody says anything about it.
They just let them be shitty and awful.
Yeah, they're just like, oh, that's just Juno, you know, like, and they just, everybody just kind of accepts it, and then eventually, like, you're gonna end up in a situation where you have to just like extricate that fucking toxic person from your group.
Yeah, man.
Oh, the other big thing I kind of wanted to discuss with you guys is this movie. So Neil Marshall doesn't kill off a single character until almost an hour into the film. And the first...
That's not true.
Well, I mean, okay, so the family dies at the beginning of the movie, but you know what I mean. Like...
a character we're supposed to care about.
Well, all right, spoilers ahead here for a second. But if you, like, think about it like Midsommar, like, you know, her family dies at the beginning of the movie, but then nothing happens for a long, long portion of time.
Yeah, for 2.5 of a 3-hour runtime.
Right, exactly. So, would we count this as a slow burn, and would we say that this movie's kind of ahead of its time? And if it were released today, do we think we'd see it kind of classified as part of that A24 light style of film?
Yes, yes, and yes.
Okay. So you think that this would fall very well into the A24, like...
Absolutely.
...horror tent? Okay. What about you, Sam? You seem a little reluctant on that.
I'm not sure. I don't think it's like... I don't know if this is the right word, but I'm going to say it anyway. Hold on. Let me look this up before I sound like a fucking asshole.
Was it the right word, or were you
going to... It was the right word. Sweet. Okay. I'm not an idiot. I don't think this movie is, like, esoteric enough to be an A24 light movie.
Okay. Why not?
And maybe, so, like, I know, Palmer, you've seen this plenty of times. Alex, have you seen this movie before?
Yeah.
Okay.
I watched this movie when I was pregnant, which was weird.
Nice. This is what Silas was trying to fight off inside of
me. What the crap?
So I've not actually seen this movie, and it's actually the first one that we've covered where Mary, like, she was like, what are you watching? I was like, I don't know, some movie about a bunch of women in a cave. She goes, oh, The Descent.
Okay.
So she saw this movie in theaters with Palmer.
Yeah, but don't you think she probably only saw it in theaters because I dragged her to go see it in theaters? Well, not really dragged, but...
I don't know, maybe. But, like, it's one of those... I feel like on multiple viewings, and maybe that's the part that I'm missing out on, is, like, multiple viewings kind of shedding the light on all these different things we're talking about. But from my perspective on the initial view, like, it doesn't feel kind of, like... like, the environment... doesn't play that well for me, especially in the second half of the movie when it, like, the camera work all gets very jarring and choppy. It, for some reason, it just doesn't line up for me.
See, but what about that movie that we watched? Remember the French one with the dancers? Wasn't that an A24 movie also? That's also very disorienting. And Climax, that's it.
Yeah, but I think, and that's where this whole A24 light definition kind of gets a little weird, is because knowing that was made by A24, I still wouldn't, like, compare that to things like Midsommar or The Lighthouse, because it's just a different kind of movie of theirs. But I guess maybe that's a good comparison, because I think this one does play well, does track a lot better with something like Climax.
Yeah. Well, I think the dealing with the grief and the whole, you know, group dynamic is a kind of a something that is common for A24 movies, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is common for A24 films. And exploring kind of relationships in general is a big common point for A24 films, which is why I'm with you, Alex. I think that this would fall into that realm. Like, if this came out nowadays and it was, like, part of, like, the A24 wheelhouse, like, I think it would fit perfectly and people would be like, oh yeah, absolutely. Like I think it's also kind of interesting to watch Neil Marshall go from doing movies like this that were like critically acclaimed to doing their Hellboy reboot that has like 3% on Rotten Tomatoes. Yes.
I think he did two movies between these and then did like a bunch of TV stuff. And yeah. then came in to pick over the bones of whatever was left from the trouble that Hellboy was constantly in.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I hope he redeems himself with his next film because he used to be such a good director. Although I really do feel like it wasn't, maybe Hellboy was not his
Hellboy
fault.
Wasn't his fault.
So we have any last bits we want to touch on here with this film?
No.
No.
I really liked it a lot.
I enjoyed this one a lot. Having not seen it before was, you know, surprising. I feel like there were parts where I feel like I'd seen chunks of this movie before, but never the whole thing. So I've probably seen it in passing. This was a fun one.
Let's all remain calm and carry on. What are we rating this movie out of? I was thinking mind caves.
Mind caves?
like your brain.
Yeah.
Mind brain caves.
Yeah, mind cave sounds great.
All right, how many mind caves are we giving this?
I'm going to give this a 4.25 mind caves.
Whoa, that's a lot of mind caves.
Yeah, I really like this movie quite a bit.
What about you, Sam?
Quite good.
Quite good? I'll give this a 4 mind caves. Four out of five mind caves.
And then I'm giving this 5 mind caves.
I'm not surprised by that. You've wanted to cover this movie for a long time.
Yeah, I really do love this movie a lot, which puts us at 4.41666666666666 mind caves.
Hey, we did it.
Hey, mind caves.
We did do it. We did do it. It's amazing. It's an amazing time that we are alive in when I can say 66666 repeating again.
It's always a big day.
Well, I guess that wraps it up for this week's main event. All the excitement, all the hullabaloo,
all the things jibba jabba. Going
on, the jibba jabba, the jabby jibbers. Time for the housekeeping. As per usual, you can follow us on pretty much every major social media platform at Terror Incognito. You can visit our website too. It's at terrorincognito.com. You can also email us at cast@terrorincognito.com. You can follow us individually too. I'm Palmer at Sturmsworth.
I'm Alex, A. Looters.
And I'm Sam at Sam Heaps, where I threatened to shit in my neighbor's yard.
Yeah, I retweeted that, by the way. Did you see that? That was pretty good. that was fun. What are we covering next week?
We are covering Death Proof.
Death Proof. Oh, yeah. This is my second.
At your recommendation, because you have a joke about Quentin Tarantino that you've decided that you want to share with the world.
Yes. If we're still in quarantine, you'll find out what it is next week.
Quentin Quarantino.
God damn it, Sam.
God, no.
All right. In the meantime, everybody, stay safe. Wash your hands. Make sure you're hugging your loved ones. You're cherishing the time that you have. You're drinking your hot liquids. You're using antiseptics for the gargling. You're not touching the handrails without disinfectants.
And for the love of God, just stop going to fucking places you don't need to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's let this thing be a... I watched a YouTube video on, I guess, the different levels of pandemic. And so there's like a fast moving pandemic. And obviously that's not what we want this to become. We want this to be a slow burn pandemic. They're both awful. People are going to die either way, but one will flood our medical systems and the other one will not. So let's keep it a slow moving pandemic. Stay with people that haven't been in contact with the virus. And just, you know what, just enjoy some time. I know a lot of the people that listen to this podcast are antisocial anyways. Keep it that way. Don't decide to be antisocial.
A lot of the people that do this podcast are antisocial.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, it's true. Part of the reason that we do it is because we're really the only people that we get along with.
I don't have to worry about going into a cave system with 7 fucking people I've barely met.
Exactly.
I would only go in with you 2 people. Exactly. Because you're my only actual friends.
Exactly.
And we would all die anyways.
It's all true. All right, everybody, take care. We'll catch y'all next week with Death Proof.